This podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime Now, delivering whatever you need when you need it. Menace to society. All right, well, before we get started, I want to personally recognize and send prayers to an area that I spent a great deal of time in and really fell in love with, the community in Virginia Beach, Virginia. The tragic events that unfolded this past weekend were senseless, horrific, and heartbreaking. After spending the better part of 7 years recruiting the Norfolk Beach area, I can tell you the quality of people that reside and have an enormous amount of pride in the 757 are just great people. Some of the best relationships with coaches, school employees, families, and kids I have built were in Virginia Beach, and my heart breaks for everyone affected by those devastating events. I'm thinking of all of you in the 757, and I'd ask anyone listening to say a prayer for the victims, the families, and this community, because they did not deserve this evil. All right, well, I want to get into the show, and first I want to talk about the future of this show, because I feel a transition coming, and I want to start off by saying that we're going to dive into football, sports, and recruiting, but not from someone that studied how to write or say words in a classroom, got a journalism degree. This is going to be from someone that lived it, that breathed it, that was it. I want to give you a perspective on what is going on from someone that actually experienced it. I want you to have an intimate understanding of a world that is so popular. This show is going to now transition and continue with the backstories, the things that people want to know about my experiences, but also my perspective on current events, things that are going on, which we'll get into a little bit in this show. But as we transition, we're going to start to do this show twice weekly instead of once because we have so much content. We have so much to put out and the support has been overwhelming. What I would ask is that you go to our website, www.menacetosocietypodcast.com, and check it out. That's where you can access all of our content. And we're going to be transforming the website to provide additional content outside of this show moving forward. Also, I would ask that you fill out the form to join our weekly newsletter that will be starting here in a couple weeks. If you go to the Contact Us page, you can send us a question, send us your email, and we'll add you to the list. And so we can increase the scope and the reach that this has.
Okay, so that's how you see the future of the show going, and I agree 100% that that's where it should be going. But what I have wanted to know, and I don't even think I know this personally, but is how you decided you wanted to be a coach in the first place. I mean, we've talked a lot about why you don't want to be a coach anymore, but what was it that made you want to be a coach?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, it all started with my grandfather. From a very young age, I got to see a very personal side of his impact as a football coach. Not just the successes he had, not just the fame, not just the notoriety, but the impact he had on people. And I used to always think about it, even at 10, 11, 12 years old, just like, wow, like he impacted so many people on such a deep level. I want to have that kind of impact on people, period. Whether it's coaching or something else, it doesn't matter. But I want to have that impact. And I'll never forget, my earliest memory as a kid was after he got fired in 1987 when the band came to his house and played and him, tears rolling down his face. This is the toughest son of a bitch I've ever met in my life. Tears rolling down his face. And I'm sitting here like, I'm 3 years old. I don't know what is going on, but I'm watching this idol, God to me, tears rolling down his face. The band is outside. It's pitch black in Worthington Hills in Worthington, right out front of his house. And I'm sitting here like, as a little kid. Now, mind you, my mom and my aunts and everyone were there, my grandmother. And I was like, what's going on? I'd never forget this. They say, Papa got fired. And I'm sitting here like, Papa got lit on fire? And it was like, I had no way to understand the concept of what was going on, but I'll never forget that moment mainly because I saw this giant in my mind that was broken. And that emotional response let me know at a very young age, the emotional investment he had into doing that. And then the rest of my life, the impact that it made on me. I mean, I was too young when he was at Ohio State to understand what was going on. I lived in Columbus my whole life. So, my whole younger life. And so that definitely molded my opinion of him because he was Earl Bruce, you know, the former Ohio State coach, and I'm in Columbus, Ohio, and Buckeye Nation is strong. But what really did it for me was Colorado State when he went there. Going out there, I was old enough to understand football, go to practice, go to training table, and I would interact with these people. And one of the people that I interacted with that I was very close with later in my career, obviously, was Tony Alford. Great, great running back for my grandfather and a great football coach and a really a great person. And just interacting with him, and I used to always tell people, it's a completely bogus story, but anytime I recruited a running back or met one of his recruits, I would have to always tell this story. I would tell him like about our relationship and how he played for my grandfather. And I would tell a story about when I went out to Colorado State, went to practice, and I was like running on the field and they were jogging. All of a sudden he looked over at me, he goes, "Hey, little kid, get your ass out of the way." And recruits would always be like, "What?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm this little kid. Here's this big, muscled up running back." And he's like, "Hey, bro, hey, little kid, get out of the way." And I was like, I was so scared of him. But I did. I idolized those guys. And more than that, it was after he was done coaching. We would go. I remember he used to take me school clothes shopping. And we would go to the mall. And people would come up to him and want his autograph. And that was cute and everything, like whatever. But they would just, the way they would talk about him was amazing to me. Like I just was so enthralled and just amazed by it. And then more important than that was the interaction I had with former players and what they would say to me, you know, maybe a 16-year-old kid or an 18-year-old kid, where I remember one summer he needed to go buy a car and I rode with him and we went to see of course, if you're going to buy a car, you're going to go see one of his former players, for sure. Yeah. Who's going to sell you a car. And so we went and I'll never forget it. Like he was doing the paperwork, signing something off in a different room. And the former player looked at me and was like, "Hey, that guy right there impacted my life more than anyone in the world. He's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing today and why I have a great family and am successful." And I was sitting here like, wow.
Wow. Just wow. Like,
what do I want to do with my life? I want to impact people. I want to have a scope of people that I can help better, right? That's mm-hmm. why I got into coaching. And not only that, but the way he operated, like his prowess with my family, his influence, his command. When he said something, people listened. When he demanded something, people did it. And not just, you know, that's with anyone. That could be with the toilet repair guy that came over to fix his toilet. It was like, oh boy, that toilet better get fixed right. And just the way he operated was so motivating and shaped who I wanted to be. And it was, that's why I got into it.
Yeah. Well, so how did you parlay that command and prowess into this show?
Well, he was the realest person I've ever met. Like there was not an ounce of bullshit in his blood, veins, or bones. And so obviously after everything that happened, as there was a transition into what do I want to do? I still want to have that influence. That was my whole motivating factor in the world. I want to help people. I want to motivate people. I want to do good for someone. And obviously I have three kids and that's the number one important thing to me is providing that for them like he did for me. But I want it to be bigger than that. I want to help. I want to do more than that. And so this podcast, I want it to be big. I know this content will be valuable on so many levels because of one thing. It's different. This is not some local radio show that just goes on and on about nonsense or has no perspective. I want this perspective and angle to be different from mainstream media. I want it to be different from mainstream sports. I want it to be different from mainstream news. And I think about it, and it's like you look at Barstool Sports, right? Yes. Everyone knows Barstool Sports.
We've all heard of it.
Yep.
But why did Barstool Sports make it big?
Well, I think part of the reason is just because they're different, right?
Well, that's one of the things. They're different, but also they go against the norm, right? Against
well, they speak the grain, their. Yeah. I think they speak their mind,
right?
Then they don't.
They have no filter.
Beat around the bush, yeah.
And it's just like in recruiting. I used to deal with. Just be genuine.
Exactly.
Guess what? You're going to piss some people off. Okay. Most people want genuine words. They want genuine content. They want something real from your heart that is that is no bullshit, no filter, real. And the amount of respect I have for what they did, and the guy Dave Portnoy that started it, sometimes he comes off as this flamboyant personality, but you watch the latest interview he gave, I forget what it was. They had like a big towel gate.
Yeah, it was on Fox News with Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson. It was, they called it Barstool Towel Gate. Right. Because of all the different gates there in Boston area.
Right.
You know.
Deflate.
Yeah.
Right.
Spy.
But,
yep.
But it was bizarre. But never mind what happened there. It was like something about the Bruins contacted them about sponsoring this towel they were going to give out for the Stanley Cup. And it pissed a bunch of like feminists off because they're a sexist company, blah, blah, blah. And what, that's all well and good. Whatever, that happened. What I loved was the interview with him because he doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't care.
No, and he's
he'll
just,
tell
and,
you.
And when you look at him, if you watch that interview, he is 100% real with that interview about like, mm-hmm. listen, you can talk to us. We are not sexist. We employ the most female. We have the most highly rated female podcast in the history of podcasts.
But it just goes like, back. It goes back to anything else, right? And a lot of things we've talked about, just these narratives and these things that just get fueled and all of a sudden mayors of cities and all these people are outraged and it's like, for what? Cause they talk real shit.
Well, I think there are people that are just sitting around that want to be mad about something.
Oh, that's, and he even,
I think he might've said that.
Yeah.
Too.
He even said that.
he calls them the NFC, the no fun club.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And that's what it is. But anyways, I'm a fan of Barstool. I've listened to their stuff. I actually, when I was at Ohio State, we were no huddle offense. We did all these signals, right? And they have these poster boards. You ever watch it? They put up poster boards.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be all these pictures. And 99% of the time, here's a little secret. Don't tell any college football program. But the poster boards are bullshit.
Nothing. They mean absolutely nothing. Right?
It literally is.
I always thought that, but I.
It's literally a distraction element. Like, oh, maybe if mini me is the top right picture, it's a pass. That's like, no, that's all bullshit.
It's a run and, right.
And I used to, and so I told our GAs this probably 2 years ago. I said, why don't you take this as an opportunity to try to like promote Ohio State? I was always thinking recruiting. And so they put on there like a Barstool Sports logo on a couple of them, and Barstool Sports ran with it, put it on their site. And I went back to them. I was like, that's gold right there, gold, because we're holding up poster boards with stupid shit on there. Put something on there that might help us. And Barstool ran with it. And I love that about them is they saw it and they're like, this is funny as shit. And I'll never forget it. It was awesome. But that guy, Dave Portnoy, and I don't know him. I don't know anything about him. I know a little bit about his company and what he's done. And I think he definitely is an elite person to take some publication that was being passed out on the streets and turn it into Barstool Sports, which is kicking every media venue's
multi-million dollar company.
Oh, they ridiculous. And I just thought about like, why are they successful? And that's why, right? That's why. Because they're genuine, no bullshit. They say what they want. They say what people want to hear. And that's going to piss off a handful of people. But you know what? Screw them.
Right.
But I also have taken a lot of motivation from other elite people that I know, or it's unbelievable nowadays. You can go on social media and find some elite people with elite messages. You talk about motivation. And there's people that I haven't even met that I've listened to a 1 minute video and I'm like, man, that speaks to me. And you could find that everywhere. It's all these influencers and people like that. And the one guy that that I actually have had some personal interaction with that I think is in a league of his own right now is Gary V. Gary, how do you say his last name?
Vaynerchuk.
He is on another level. And with everything he does, if you want to talk about business, like the stuff he does with content and things like that is outstanding. But more important than that is his message and his influence. And we had an interaction probably 3 years ago, whatever. He had a girl that I knew that did some recruiting stuff, recruiting content videos and things like that for our company, who's now like a big shot. Her name's Madison Jesiato. She's a big time, I don't know, personality in politics.
Yeah.
She actually ran into him and sent me a message and was like, hey, I'm talking to Gary V. He asked me about you. And I guess he's a big social media guy. He's a big content guy, he's huge into influencing social media. And I guess I don't know if he saw what I did in recruiting and the content I put out, and he liked it. And we shared messages. And anyways, that led me to kind of listen to his stuff, read his stuff, go into his stuff. And it's you talk about how to build a business, how to be happy. It's elite.
Yeah. I mean, when you listen to him, because he's somebody that's influenced me directly very carefully, but the message he puts out is such a positive message. It's all about positivity, empathy, being grateful for things. And it's just, he is definitely elite in so many different ways. And his social media strategy kills everybody. I mean, it's and that's why he is what he is.
Yeah, and he's I don't know. He when he talks, you listen, and he speaks to you, and he's real. Go back to the Barstool; it's genuine.
Yeah.
But that obviously the most influential person professionally I've dealt with is Urban Meyer, as far as an elite person. And what I really want, what I think that people will want to hear, or need to hear, or maybe can take something from and apply in their own situation at work or wherever, is what I think I did well, not well and well, and how I operated as a direct employee underneath someone that's elite, right?
Yes.
The first thing I did, and I struggled with it. I mean, I worked for Urban Meyer from 2005 until 2018, basically outside of 2 years. So forever. And the one thing I had to do every day was buckle up, buckle up. You had never knew what was coming. We used to joke all the time. I remember Mike Vrabel and I used to joke about it. It was like, and Tom Herman and I did too. It was like, when you thought things were going really well, like you're killing it in recruiting, your position group is killing it, everything's going great. Like you just walk into work like, man, I'm on my shit. That's when you really got to feel nervous.
Right. Because throw something out there.
Because he was so elite at motivating people. It was like, that's when he would just absolutely let off a bomb in your professional life. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I got to do this. And all.
Well, it's because I think he probably thought you were getting content.
Yeah, right. You were getting complacent.
Exactly.
And he used to do it all the time. And I used to, it used to blow my mind. He would do it to the staff. Like after 2014, won a national championship. You know, all these things are great. Recruiting, killing it, right? Who doesn't want to be a Buckeye? All of a sudden, I'll never forget it. We went in a staff meeting one time. This is probably mid-January. It was not the end of recruiting, but people are feeling good, a lot of momentum. And he went on a tirade in a staff meeting. I mean, in calling people out, blowing people up. People were fearing for their jobs. They walked out of there and everyone, it was like a buzz was in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And people were just, I mean, it was insanity. And I'll never forget, about 2 hours later, I was in my own insanity. I'm like, oh, I got to get my shit together. I got to get my guys right. I got to do this. I got to do that. I'll never forget. I just, all of a sudden, it just hit me. I stopped, pressed pause. And I just looked around. I was like, wow. This guy is ridiculous.
That's why he does it.
Yeah.
Right there. I'm seeing these $500,000 a year coaches like who have the best D line in the country, or they got six guys committed and they are acting like they're about to get fired if they don't do something. It was unreal.
Just lit a fire under their ass.
And you know what? You talk about buckle up every day. What he taught me, and Greg Schiano taught me this too, is the one thing I used to, so let's say you got to be at work. We had to be at work at 7 a.m. every day. That means the meeting starts at 7 a.m. So you got to be there a little bit early. So I used to come in at 6:50, right? Get there 10 minutes early, make sure I got my computer set up, whatever, and then ready to roll. He used to harp on it, and Shiano used to do it, is don't come at 6:50. Come at 6 a.m. or 5:45 to give yourself an hour to get yourself right. Get your mind right, maybe read a devotional, maybe just browse ESPN.com. Like, it doesn't matter, but get your mind right and get comfortable at work.
Yeah, settle in.
Yeah, before you walk into that storm. The other thing that was key with him was that you had to take everything with a grain of salt. You had to take yourself out of the situation. This was hard for me to learn because I took it very personal my first year and a half. You had to take yourself out of it and view it from a third person. Like, what is he trying to get accomplished? What is he trying to get me to do? And go do it. Right. And then it was the greatest example I can give you is things were going really well for me personally. My group was operating at an elite level. I was killing it in recruiting. And he, out of nowhere, he was furious about something. He called me up. He was on the treadmill. He called me up to him, me and my GA, who was his son-in-law, called us up to talk to him on the treadmill. Right. Mm-hmm. And he starts destroying me. Mind you, everything is going great. I when he texted me, like, come see me, bring Corey, I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
This is going to be good news. I'm excited. Like, let's go talk to coach.
Can't wait for this meeting for once.
So I walk up there and I'm talking about Corey and I walked out of there like, what? I felt like, I think he fired both of us. This is son-in-law now. I think he fired both of us. He called me names that I've never been called before. And it was about like not sending out enough letters or I don't remember. It doesn't matter what it was, but it was lighting a fire under my ass.
I
right?
doubt you've never been called those names.
No. He called me one name. I've never been called by anyone but him. Okay. I'm not going to bring that up.
Okay.
But,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what it taught me was to adhere, to adjust, to listen to him, to learn from what he was saying. And it really taught me how to take hard coaching, hard development, because it worked. Like, I became so much better every week, every month, that it was.
Do you think that he does that to the coaches to kind of try to teach them how to give hard coaching?
In a little bit. Yeah. A little bit. But most of these coaches, I mean, it depends on what level. Like, at Ohio State, most of the coaches know how to get the most out of the players. Okay. Now, he can enhance it and improve it.
Yeah.
But it was more to improve. To get your mind going, to get your heart pumping, to get you to lock back in and say, ooh, and all of a sudden you start really increasing efficiency. You can't, yeah. It was unbelievable.
Do you think that he did it differently for different coaches?
Oh, that was.
Because you have to, right?
He did it. Every player he coached different. Every coach he interacted with different. He was that's what he was great at.
Identifying
how to push this guy's button, this player's buttons. And obviously it didn't always work perfect, mm-hmm. but he would never treat anyone the same. He'd treat people fair, but never the same. And the one thing that I did also learn from working for him is you had to pick your battles. Most of the time you had to just take it. You just had to take it. But he was actually pretty good at this at Ohio State. He was terrible at it at Florida, but he knew he didn't have all the answers, and he knew he was built one way, and he had these assistant coaches to kind of fit the voids and help make the program what he wanted it. And you had to learn how to pick your battles, because he used to say, no leader knows everything. They aren't at ground zero. They're not on the road recruiting. They're not talking to X recruit every day. They don't know everything. They're relying on you. And so they aren't in the dirt like you are. They aren't in the battles and in the fight, and they aren't. They don't have the relationship with the ex receiver every like you have, right? And I'll never forget a story. So Benjamin Victor was a kid I recruited out of South Florida. A very, very talented kid who's had a good career this year. I'd imagine he'll have an elite career because he's one of the most freak talents I've ever seen. And he's as good of a kid as you've ever met. And I never forget, I was recruiting him and Urban didn't know him at all. He had hardly talked to him, had little interaction. I recruited him basically by myself. And there was another receiver we were recruiting that I won't bring up, but Urban knew him really well and really wanted him. I had him flipped. Ben was a much higher rated player for me. And he destroyed me about him. I mean, went off about, you're going to recruit this Ben Victor. I don't even know who Ben Victor is. You're not doing as good a job with this kid as you are Ben Victor. And I'll never forget, I've looked at him finally. I was like, listen, you, Mark Pantone, all these people can tell you. We can all say this kid's the better kid for Ohio State. I'm telling you right now, I'm the receiver coach. I know both of them. Ben Victor is the kid we want. That's the kid I'm going to go get. And I'll still recruit the other kid, but you're not going to tell me we don't want Ben Victor. And I'll never forget it. And that was one of the handful of times I ever kind of was like, time out now. Absolutely not. And so what did I do? I went and got Ben Victor. The kid was on campus for, I don't know, 3 months. We go through fall camp and Urban's like, wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And he actually figured it out in recruiting earlier than that.
Yeah.
But it was like, wow. Like, this kid's the salt of the earth kid, great kid.
Yeah.
Beautiful kid, smart kid. That
how tall is Ben?
Oh, I don't know. 6'4". He has a wingspan.
Huge.
Like
seven feet.
Outrageous wingspan. But moral of the story was
really good.
That was one example where and Urban, because I never did that, when I did it, he was like, all right, I'm going
to
listen.
Okay. He took it to heart. Exactly. Yeah, he took it to heart.
Because ultimately all he wanted was conviction. And he would, you could say, I want to run this play. And he would break you like a twig. And all of a sudden people in the room would be like, yeah, I don't think you really want to run that play. Yeah. But also if you pounded the table, and Steve Adazio, the head coach of Boston College, was great at this. He had conviction. When he believed in something or thought something, he would pound a table, get in your face, and all it showed was, all right, you know what? Urban used to try to push coaches to conviction. That's what he tried to do. He tried to push you to a point where you would back down, or you'd have so much conviction that you would stand up to the boss. Mm-hmm. And when you did that, he knew
That's it.
That's the decision.
So you bring that story up, and that just was there ever another coach that you saw Urban kind of handle in a way that maybe he stood up to Urban in that kind of way? Like somebody that maybe he berated, and then all of a sudden it was just like, listen, you're not going to treat me that way. Like Adazio obviously knew when to do it. You obviously picked your time.
Yeah. He did it to everyone. And I saw a lot of coaches back down. I saw a lot of coaches have conviction. I also saw a lot of coaches have false conviction, and that never ended well. Yeah.
What about like Dan Mullen? Was he ever?
Yeah. Dan Mullen and Urban got into a lot of heated arguments because Dan is brilliant and had and especially when it comes to football and had a lot of conviction about his beliefs and they were, I mean, Urban used to say it like, Dan is a brilliant coach, and he is. I worked with him. Brilliant. Great coach. And Urban used to say, like, but I don't want to go have a beer with him. Like, I don't like the guy. Yeah. He's just an elite coach, and he was. And there was a lot of people like that.
Well, the reason I ask is because I think back to Ohio State and, like, the coaches he was with. And to me, one of the coaches that he was with is somebody that I can't imagine Urban, like, going after. And him taking it. And that's Mike Vrabel.
Yeah,
and I really wonder what that interaction was like.
Yeah, you know what?
I've heard a few stories.
I don't know anyone that would go at Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I mean that's a dude right there.
Yeah, I remember Tom Herman. Tom Herman went after him in a mat drill one time, and that was one of those like, hold me back, like please God, hold me
someone,
back,
someone, hold me back, someone
and it was please. And I mean, it was really funny. Like, what are you trying to? You're biting off a little bit more than you can chew, buddy. Yeah.
So I just want to go continue with that. What was the dynamic between Urban and like Vrabel and Fickell?
I don't know that much because they were on defense. I mean, I was around them a lot.
Yeah,
but there was definitely some conflict. There was definitely some difference in opinions. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he like I said, he knew how to motivate different people differently, how they needed to be motivated. And sometimes he would push the wrong button and it mm-hmm. probably wouldn't go over well, but it wasn't, I don't know exactly.
It wasn't toxic or anything, but it was okay.
No, but the one thing that I saw when it came to Urban and talk about learning and motivating, one of the most motivating staff meetings we ever had, and Ohio State fans know about this, was after the 2012 national championship game. Notre Dame played Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. We had just went undefeated. We were on sanctions, couldn't go to a bowl game.
Bullshit.
And we would have, and I mean, knowing what I know about college football, we would have never even been able to hang with Alabama. But the good thing was, is Alabama had a loss. We would have played Notre Dame. We would have mopped the floor with them, and we would have been the national champions. Unrightfully, but we would have been. Mm-hmm. Alabama was the best team in the country, and that was proven on the field.
By far, yeah.
But that was pre-playoffs, so no one would have ever seen them play for it, and that's that. But here's what happened. He went down, Urban went down and was on ESPN commentating, right? And he came back, I'll never forget it, he sent a text right after pregame, a long text, and I should find it and read it. Because it was all about, I mean, it was like one of the most motivating texts I ever received, but it was all about the chase, right? Yeah, and people know the chase. I think they think we were chasing a national championship. No. We were chasing Bama.
Yeah.
The whole thing was, and here's what did it. And here's how like detail oriented he is. He's in pregame watching the D-line warm up. He's watching them do a fit drill where you like, you know, take on a block and shoot your hands. And he's watching them, and every kid had excellent hand placement, hands inside, thumbs up, what we ended up calling the difference, like just perfect every time. He's looking at it like, wow, this team is so much better coached than we are. And so he came back, and he just looked at the whole staff, and he said, listen, I think we have a good staff. We don't have a great staff. We are chasing Alabama right now because what they are getting done with their players is on another level from us. And you fast forward and think about it. That's 2012. They won the national championship. 2 years later, we were on a chase, and we caught them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You got them.
Ohio State, Alabama, let's see whose hand placement's better.
That was
yeah.
And that's what it was all about.
Great game.
The whole game. And when you talk about Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, Ohio State, Alabama, that game was about one thing, details.
Yeah.
It was about when the slot receiver went to block Darren Lee, who was going to win that one-on-one battle.
Yeah.
And because of Urban Meyer being at that national championship game in 2012,
we were better prepared.
Yeah.
Because that was our whole mantra for 2 years.
That is just insane.
All right. Well, now I'd like to circle back and let's get into some of the feedback from the first two episodes that we got.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to make sure everyone knows is I personally read every response, comment, message, tweet, everything that any interaction you have with our podcast or with me, I read it. Now, it's a lot. So I might not get back to everyone, but we read it all, and I know you put everything in a document so we can go back and pick questions and things like that and topics that people want to hear, because ultimately we're trying to make this something that people want to listen to. And I've been overwhelmed by the magnitude that this show is already reaching. It is almost too much to organize, but we will be responding to the best and worst inquiries. At the end of this episode, we're going to take some Q&A that people sent in, and the most relevant and best questions will be answered. Also, the most ignorant and outrageous questions will also be answered. So please continue to send those in.
Yeah, so before we get into some of the content that we have planned, I personally run the social media, and I think we should address some of the responses we have received that were overwhelmingly common. Things that hundreds and hundreds of people have wanted to know.
Yeah, so one of the hottest things that people ask is about the Ed Warner stuff about last episode, and ultimately a couple things. One is Urban's ownership in it, and you see it when asked about it. It actually happened this week about one of his greatest regrets, and he mentioned 2015. Urban owned it all. He made a decision to promote Ed because it was the only way to keep Ed and not make him disgruntled, because he was so egotistical. And Urban, I think, didn't know how bad he would be, but I think he knew that it wasn't the right move. And he promoted him. And then I think after 3 months or maybe 6 months, he even called me into his office and was like, "Hey, I need your help. You have to be my guy in there. Like, we got to make this work. Like, we got to make it happen." And it was all, you could see the panic in his heart. Like, "Oh God, I fucked this up." And it was like, I was sitting there like, okay, I mean, what do you want me to do? Tell the coordinator you're a dumbass? Like, okay, I'll try. But, and the other thing people asked a lot about is, he couldn't call a play. And I don't know that people know what I mean by that, but we were an up-tempo offense. Here's a great example, right? And we had a term. It was called jet. Jet is like, you know, like a plane. It means like we're going to go really, really fast. So like after a play was run and the play's on the field, we had a signal and it was like jet, 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 jet. And that means like we are going at Mach speed as fast as you can go to the line,
like, on the ball,
and we're going to
get your ass moving,
and we're going to give you one word, and you're going to run that play as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of a game, when he was in a box in 2015, it's a timeout, TV timeout, commercial break. We're talking on the headsets, and like I said, I was the one that conveyed the play to the JT Barrett. Right, we're in the huddle. I got JT. And I'll never forget it, because backup quarterbacks are on the headphones, GAs, interns, and so Urban's like, "All right, let's call this. Let's do this. All right." So we're all on the same page. And then nothing. Radio silence. And Urban's like, "Ed, call it." And all of a sudden, I'm sitting here with JT. JT's looking at me. "You're about to go out on the field." And I believe it was Michigan State. And all of a sudden, Ed starts saying, "Jet, jet, 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 jet." And I'm sitting here like,
timeout.
I'm sitting here like, and I'll never forget the looks on the backup quarterback's faces and the GAs. Everyone was like, it was almost like Ron Burgundy. "I read what's ever on the teleprompter." Somewhere on that call sheet that he had, it said jet, 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 and then some play. And he was like, "Oh, I want to call that play." So he called it. And it's like, you got to be the dumbest son of a bitch alive to not realize that that's a tempo play that's in the middle of a series. You can't call it from the sideline. People will look at you like, "Jet what, bro?" It was wild. And that's just one example. But I realized after listening to the first episode and reading some responses, like, people don't know what a play call sounds like.
Well, no.
And that's just one example. I can give you more later. But
wasn't it like he couldn't verbalize?
Yeah, I mean, he
just sit there and
It would be mumbling and things like that. Like you're like, oh my God, say Trey Wright. That's the formation. Just say Trey Wright. Like that's how bad it was.
Get us started, right?
And I'll tell you the other thing that I read a lot about, and it was about the Tom Herman story, which I know in the audio with the flight attendant that he had extramarital affairs with. And everyone was like, oh, so Tom Herman arranged this orgy, but no, Tom Herman didn't arrange it. Tom Herman just took part in it.
He was there.
So there's this guy, and I don't know his name, but everyone called him Jeeb, J-E-E-B, Jeeb. And he works at SMU now as like a director of football. He's always been like a recruiting guy, operations guy. And so the woman you heard on the first podcast was a college friend of his. That ended up becoming a flight attendant. And then Jeeb went into college recruiting and met a bunch of coaches like Tom Herman and a bunch of other coaches like Texas rooted coaches. So he knew these coaches, right? And he went to college with her who became a flight attendant. She had friends. And so fast forward, once they all, you know, went their separate ways, they would go through him, Jeeb, to organize when they all were going to go to Dallas. So they all could hang out together at night afterwards, whatever. And they all stayed at the one hotel. And he would coordinate these group of flight attendants to fly in and keep them company.
What was the incentive for the flight attendants?
Well, I think you heard it. She said, well, I'm single. I like to party. And
It's just status.
Man. Well, I think it's also that they were on the road a lot, whatever, single and wanted to have fun. And all of a sudden these high paid, highly successful coaches are in Dallas and partying and they wanted to go party and have a good time. Yep. But yeah, Tom Herman didn't set it all up. He certainly wasn't the orchestrator. He was just a participant. It was this guy named Jeeb.
He was SMU. A member. He was a member of the club.
Beneficiary.
Right.
So, but I would kind of piggybacking off of that. I certainly want to talk about recruiting every episode. Every episode, I want to discuss the lifeblood of college athletics, how it works, the reality of it, what goes on, things that I've experienced. I want to give people a bird's eye view into what it's like to be on the front line of some of these epic battles, to land the top resource in an industry that enhances, empowers, develops, and also exploits their lifeblood resource. There is a great side to recruiting that I've been a firsthand witness to, just the relationships you build with families, coaches, friends of recruits, and kids, really. And one of the greatest examples I have is a kid named Jalen Holmes. And going back to the Virginia Beach stuff I talked about initially in the podcast at the beginning, he's one of the kids I recruited that I think I was probably the closest with him, his family, his mom, his dad, his brother, their aunts, uncles, grandma, his coach, his assistant coach. I mean, I'm talking about I had a great relationship to the point where I still talk to a couple of them to this day. And I'll never forget, he was a big-time recruit. It was us, Florida State, Alabama. That was really it. And we're recruiting him, and right towards the end of recruiting, Mike Vrabel gets the Houston Texans job and leaves. And Urban's in a panic. This is like one of our prize recruits. And so he comes on a home visit with me. Right, we go into home visit. His whole family's there. The morale, the relationships. It was so evident that these were my, like, I'm talking about, these are like family. To this day, they're like family. And Urban told me, and he even brought it up in a staff meeting. He was like, "You want to talk about great recruiting? You talk about, like, when I knew we're good here. Like, we got no issue. This kid's position coach just left a couple weeks before signing day." We're at his house in a home visit. I get a FaceTime call from, that was my then 4-year-old son. I think I talked to my son for a minute. Jalen talked to him for about 6. Asked him how flag football was going. They're going back and forth. And Urban is sitting there like, wow. Like, this high school kid in Norfolk, Virginia knows Zach Smith's son very well. To the point where my son got on the phone and said, "What's up, Jay?" Like, this is not the first conversation. And so I bring that up because that's elite recruiting. And I want to bring something up that just happened this week, because Ohio State just signed a 5-star receiver that I started recruiting a long time ago, Julian Fleming out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And it was a huge get for Ohio State, huge get for Ryan Day, and a huge get for Brian Hartline.
And I want to read this tweet to you that I saw his wife put out. It must have been a quote he read, which on a number of levels it speaks to me. Heartline said, "The big thing that rubs me the wrong way is being labeled as a good recruiter. I don't even know what that means. To me, these guys aren't like cars. They are not things you own. They are not objects." And when he said that, people said, he's a great recruiter. Absolutely. That's what a great recruiter is. They realize that the game of recruiting is bullshit. It's phoniness. It is trying to sell a car to a kid. The great quote unquote recruiters, which Heartline is one, would have been one, will be one. He is elite. The great ones realize, no, this is relationships. This is about reality. This is about being genuine. This is no different than making a best friend, coercing a girl to date you. This is about being real and showing off what your school does and can do for them. And that's why Heartline is and will be one of the best recruiters in the country. And that's what I always believed about recruiting. And I think the problem is that is so uncommon in recruiting. But it is the key ingredient into genuine and legal recruiting success. Because not all recruiting success is legal, which we see all the time in the media, in college basketball. And we referenced one thing that I want to talk about, the dark side of recruiting. Those things that happen that undermine the genuine relationships of recruiting. And that is what we need to talk about now, the stuff that I experienced with Adidas.
Menace to society.
You mentioned the Adidas.
Oh boy.
Out in the West Coast, recruiting wise. What was that about?
Yeah. So I'll get into kind of what I experienced. And the best part is there's so many people that know what goes on on the West Coast with Adidas. It's not even funny. But for some reason, I guess college basketball maybe is the reason why it's like not paid any attention. I don't really know. But if you want to do any research, and so I recruited a kid named Tyjon Lindsey, right? And we talked about it earlier with the Nebraska coach, the receiver coach, all that whole thing in the first episode. Yep. And when I was recruiting him, I found out about this culture because I didn't recruit the West Coast really prior to him. I just recruited him because he was one of the top receivers in the country. And so what I found out was Adidas has this grassroots movement on the West Coast is what they call it. And it's all about getting the kids in high school to kind of, I don't know, get them to be Adidas people and then get them to go to Adidas schools and then hopefully get them to sign with Adidas later. But how they do it is bizarre. And it's not even like, I don't even think people care. It's weird, but they sponsor these 7-on-7 teams. Like if you're a top recruit playing on a 7-on-7 team, Adidas sponsors you immediately. Sends you all kind of gear. And Tyjon even tweeted, this is after he signed with Nebraska. Nebraska beat Ohio State. First of all, number one alarming reason, that something's going on.
Well, he decommitted, didn't he? He was committed to Ohio State.
Yeah, I'll get into how that all went down. But but he tweeted out, and you know, I'm a sore loser. So when I lost out on him to Nebraska, I was salty. Like, I'm like, why? How? Yeah,
why?
And the first thing is, here's the problem with college football. Everyone says, oh, they cheated. Most of the time, they didn't cheat. Mm-hmm. That's just an excuse. And I never wanted to say that. And this is the only time that I have said that. And it's because he tweeted out on Christmas before signing day, like, shout out to so-and-so who was an Adidas employee for hooking me up for Christmas, like the GOAT. And he tweeted out a picture of his bed with easily $2,000 worth of Adidas gear that this guy sent him. And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute now, hold on. And here's when it all turned for me. So we were recruiting six people on the West Coast. Tyjon was one of them. Tate Martell was another one who came to Ohio State, obviously. Yep. Darnay Holmes was another one in California. Bubba Bolden was a safety. And then Brevin Jordan was a tight end, right? So we were recruiting all these kids. And what was wild was how it all went down. So these kids are, you know, they have their list of top three or whatever. And as you get to know them, you find out who they really like. And they go to the All-American game, the Army All-American
US
game.
US Army, yeah.
Which is sponsored by Adidas.
Is it Adidas?
Oh, okay.
And so all these kids go, Tyjon's committed to us, Tate's committed to us, Darnay is choosing between us and USC, Bubba Bolden is probably going to USC at this point, and Brevin, I think, was a year younger. So they go out there. All of a sudden, Tate's calling us, like, I want to decommit and go to UCLA. Darnay is picking between us and USC, picks UCLA. Tyjon picks Nebraska. Tate end up, we end up, you know, weathering the storm and getting him to Ohio State because he loved Ohio State so much. Mm-hmm. But fast forward to now, where did he transfer? Miami. Adidas school. Imagine that.
Yeah.
As did Brevin Jordan. Miami. Imagine that. I think Bubba Bolden might have even transferred there. It's bizarre because these kids, like Bubba went to USC, but now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's at Miami now. But this Adidas culture out in the West Coast is wild. Like, they get in these kids' ears, they sponsor these teams, they send them gear, and all of a sudden, all these kids end up at Adidas schools.
Yeah, so just to make sure, yeah, former USC safety Bubba Bolden says he's transferring to Miami.
Yeah, right. So now you're looking at all these Adidas schools, and the last thing Miami needs is some recruiting scandal.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. If hookers can't get it done, try a shoe company, I guess.
Money can.
But... So this is all going on, and it's probably still going on. Obviously, I haven't been recruiting for a year now, but even the kids that don't go to Adidas school, somehow they found their way to Adidas school.
So how are they paying them? They're not paying them directly.
Well, I honestly don't even know the details of it. Yeah. I know they're sponsoring these teams. They're sending them gear. They're doing things at a very low high school level that I guess is undetected.
Is it the promise that they'll pay them?
Nah. I mean, I have no idea. I don't know what was said, but I do know that we walked into the Army All-American game with two kids committed, another kid that said he was going to commit, and all three of them called us like, yeah, we're out. We're going to UCLA. And I'm sitting here like, what? Oh, Tyjon was going to Nebraska, which was an Adidas school at the time. And it's like, it's just wild. It's like, they're getting away with this stuff. And it's like, the best part was it was on social media. Like I have the tweet somewhere. It was screenshotted. Like this guy sent thousands of dollars worth of gear to this high school kid. Like that's illegal, bro. And it's on social media. Like how is no one flagging this?
They're not checking it.
Like, no, but it's.
But is it illegal for somebody who's not associated with the university to just send them stuff?
Well, it's amateurism. Absolutely, it is. You can't. It's just like you can't give a kid $1,000 for no reason. Like there's a reason why you're giving him the money.
You can't give him a suit.
No, but. But regardless, the moral of the story is, it's just I see all this college basketball stuff, and it's like, all right, when are we going to get into football? Like, the stomach stuff's going on is wild, and no one wants to talk about it. No one will expose it. And I don't even think we turned it in, because I'm not into that. I never turned anyone in, because it's like, well, if you found a way to get them, congrats. Yeah. I did fine recruiting without being
without
dirty.
Doing that, yeah.
The crazy thing is that you're talking about the same company that caused the basketball scandal. Yeah, like it's all Adidas, it sounds like, but that's not to say that Nike and Under Armour and them aren't
I'm
doing
sure they
it.
All nah. do it. I'm sure they all do it.
Nah, we could get into Under Armour. I don't know much about Nike, and granted, we were a Nike school, but they never helped me. I wish. I mean, they never helped me sign a player.
Well, when you're Nike, you might not have to.
No,
I mean they.
And I don't know that Under Armour did anything illegal. I know they helped Maryland recruit a couple kids, Stephon Diggs, but I don't remember that. But I don't think it was illegal. Like I think it was all legally, like the way they did it.
Yeah.
And it was just really good recruiting. It's like I will never say Stephon Diggs went to Maryland because they cheated. Now they did a lot of things that. I was young, new to Ohio State, and I learned from it. I was like, wow, that's great. Like, I just got my ass kicked. That's great recruiting. And I
still can't believe you didn't get Stephon Diggs.
Well, no. It helps the fact that they sent him to, or like Under Armour was his home state school. I mean, he wanted to stay home.
Yeah.
That was part of it, obviously.
Either way, my moral of what I'm trying to say is I don't know if Under Armour does anything shady. I don't have any proof of that or knowledge of that. They do some great things in recruiting that I believe are legal, but Adidas does some shady shit, and I witnessed it, and I know it, and that's the only reason I'll bring it up. Under Armour might also, and I've heard rumors about Under Armour. I've heard rumors about a lot of things, but I'm not going to bring that up as fact.
Yeah,
I know that Adidas is doing shady ass shit on the West Coast.
All right, well, let's get into some question and answers we brought up earlier in the show. I went through the social media and pulled some of the questions that we were asked, and we're trying to get a little interaction with our audience here, keep everybody engaged. So the first question we have is from Kyle Wiggins in New Jersey. He says, love the podcast. Just a question. I am a young coach, and I was wondering how much are you actually yourself when you're recruiting? Like, I know, don't be fake, but you got to dress some things up, right?
Yeah, so I got this a lot when I was coaching, and I still have received a number of questions about it. And here's the thing. I guess it depends on the product you're trying to promote and sell, right? When I was at Ohio State, there was no need to dress anything up. The majority of coaches do. They layer and coat everything with a layer of bullshit. And it was like, why? Kids are so much smarter than coaches give them credit for. And they sit there and try to bullshit these kids. And that used to help people like me that was just trying to build a relationship, be genuine. I used to tell kids all the time, my only job is to get you on campus and to come see Ohio State. Because Ohio State sells itself. Our program sells itself. I don't need to tell you how great our program is. If you come see it, you're going to walk away and say, damn, that's where I want to be. I want to be in that program. They're going to maximize me. That place is awesome. Columbus is awesome. The Buckeye Nation is amazing. Like, I didn't need to coat anything with bullshit. Now, sometimes these kids get presented with a bunch of garbage, and so you have to present facts to them. But I used to always say in recruiting, the best tool I have in recruiting is Google.com. Because these schools will say, we have great academics. We make sure you get your degree. And I'll never forget when I was recruiting Jalen Holmes, a coach at Florida State told him that. And I said, Jalen, Google Florida State's academic ratings, their APR, their graduation rate, Google it and see. And he came back and he was like, wow. And I mean, it blew themselves out of the water. Because it's like, what? Why are you trying to bullshit a kid? That makes no sense. So my advice would be never. If you're genuine and real and yourself and you just call it like it is, kids are going to be attracted to that, and they want that because they want a real relationship, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of my favorite questions we have here. This is from Jeremy Phillips. He wonders, Zach, when are you just going to shut the fuck up and move along? Buckeye fans already had to deal with your drunken stupidness, and we are over you. Please do us all a favor and just shut the fuck up and go away.
Oh, well, Jeremy, fortunately, I will never shut the fuck up. I'm going to do this show. I'm going to do whatever I want because I'm not going to be victimized by Buckeye fans that are mad because Urban's not the coach, or they're mad because of the controversy, because I know what I did. I know who I am. I'm going to say whatever I want and do whatever I want because no one will silence me. That's called victim shaming. And I know that gets thrown around a lot as it relates to women, but it relates to any human being that is getting treated like dog shit for no reason. Or maybe for reason, but not a good enough reason to try to come at someone like that, Jeremy. So if you'd like to shut me the fuck up, you're welcome to come talk to me because I won't shut up. I'm going to keep talking and keep doing this show and keep doing it because it's right. And I'm going to put my voice out there because I don't care if we have 10 listeners or a million listeners. Someone will listen to this and say, wow, that's either entertaining, educational, or now I found a support structure. So I won't. Jeremy, thank you, though, for your question.
Absolutely. So I'm going to continue picking out those because we get tons of questions like that are just completely wrong and mean-spirited.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we also get some really good ones, like this one from In Darwin We Trust.
Yeah.
He says he's always been curious about play calling responsibilities. When did Urban step in? Did he at all? If so, are there any notable moments?
So Urban was very different than he was never a coordinator. So he never called a play. Like, he never at Ohio State would sit there and call a specific play. Now he would say, hey, call that shot to Devin Smith. You know, he would reference a play and he would say, hey, run the reverse trick play. Like, he was very influential in play calling, but he never called a play. And the only time it was close was going back to the Ed Warner debacle that was Ohio State football in 2015. He knew it was going to be so bad, and we had such a great team, that going into the season, he made this plan of who was going to call what plays because he knew Ed was incompetent. So he was going to be the guy in charge and say, all right, I want to run, or all right, I want to pass. And if he called for a run, Ed Warner was going to call the run. If he called for a pass, Tim Beck was going to call for a pass. And then I was the third down and red zone guy. So if you wanted to, when it came third down, I called the third down play. When it was a red zone, I called the red zone play. And it was so all over the place. You talk about mismanaged. That was the worst thing I'd ever heard of. And so he did, outside of that debacle, he was phenomenal at the momentum of a game, seeing when to take a shot or do these things. And then there was also times where he'd be like, hey, even with Tom Herman and with Ryan Day, he would say, like, I'm gonna shut the fuck up. I'm screwing you up. I'm gonna shut up.
He was really good at that, but no, he never took over play calling or anything like that, nor would he have wanted to, because I don't think he'd never done it, and that wasn't his strength.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get back to some of the recruiting stuff. Joe Hill wants to know, what's it like being on the road recruiting? He said he assumes it's more crazy for assistant than head coaches, and then also he wants you to touch on negative recruiting is a bit of a hot button issue, and he wants any insight you have into negative recruiting.
So negative recruiting is funny because you never get negative. Like when I recruited against Alabama, Clemson, and you know, the one or two other schools that might be on that level, really there probably isn't one. I never heard of Alabama or Clemson negatively recruiting Ohio State ever, because who negatively recruits? Someone that has an inferior product and needs to tear down a greater product, right? We never negatively recruited against anyone. We presented facts, we presented info, we helped people realize and find the truth, but we never needed to negatively recruit because we were selling a Maserati, right? We had the nicest of the nice, the best of the best. And when schools don't have that, they got to find a way to try to tear you down. Absolutely. And so it happens a ton, but kids saw through it most of the time. Now, what's it like being on the road recruiting? It's crazy. It's for 5 weeks in the spring, for 3 weeks in December, for 3 weeks in January. It is pure chaos. I mean, you are in – when you recruit at the level Ohio State's at, you're in a different city every day. Most of the time, at least one flight a day, sometimes two. And for an assistant, you know, it's normal travel like any businessman that travels on Southwest or whatever and stays in hotels. I mean, you don't have a lot of time, especially I recruited in the South. And there's practices in the spring, practices in the fall. You're waking up at the first school at 7 a.m. and you're done with practice at 7 p.m. And then you know, you go back to your hotel. Most of the time I'd eat at the hotel and crash. But it's insane. But now it's definitely more chaotic than head coaches. I'll never forget. You talk about being at that level, that head coach level for so long. When Urban would go on the road recruiting, he flew on NetJets, private jet, right? And if you were going to the same place he was going, you'd fly with him, which is a whole other experience. If you've never done it, it's the way to travel if you can afford it. But I'll never forget, I was with him for 3 days in South Florida and Virginia Beach, and we were going around, and I was flying with him private, and then I was going to, I think, Las Vegas, and he was going somewhere else to meet up with a different coach. So I dropped him off at the private airport to the fly on his private jet.
Yeah, for NetJets.
And he was sitting here like, and it was like a reflective moment for him. He was like, hey, so like, what do you do now? I was like, well, I got to go drop off my rental car, ride a shuttle and fly commercial. He was like, do you have to go through like security and all that? And I was like, yep, coach, got to go through security. He's like, take your shoes off, the whole deal. I was like, yeah, coach, yep, take my shoes off, all that.
Some of us are common people. Yeah, here,
and,
coach.
And he was like, wow, I don't know how you guys do it. I'm sitting here. I'll never forget it. I was like, wow, he is so out of touch with reality. He's just like, because when does the private jet take off? 30 seconds after Urban Meyer shows up. That's when. Like, oh, flight scheduled at 7? He gets there at 7:20. The flight takes off at 7:21. Like, it's just so funny. Yes, but I mean, don't get me wrong. The head coaches are in 6 different cities in a day. I mean, because they have a private jet at their disposal. So they may be in Fort Lauderdale, Norfolk, Virginia, Atlanta, Georgia, Dallas, Texas, and then Vegas all in one day. So they're flying a lot more because it's quick flights, quick travel. But yeah, that's a great question. It's a grind, but it's fun. Fun seeing different parts of the country and meeting people in different areas, and it's awesome. But I think that's really all the time we have for as far as questions are concerned. We definitely want to continue that though. So send us your questions, good or bad. We'll put them on there. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to preview kind of what we're going to get into next week and transitioning into twice a week shows. We didn't have time for the Twitter tough guy. We have it all set up. We're going to get to that next Tuesday. I also want to talk in depth about Ryan Day, who's a friend of mine and obviously the new era of Ohio State football and taking over there. I also received a message about something I didn't know about, and I watched. I think it's called the Veritas Project. It was about Urban Meyer abusing players. So I definitely want to address that because I was there, a firsthand witness to everything they're talking about. And I mean, some of it is taken out of context, some of it's true, some of it's absolutely false. And I want to dive into that a little bit because I received 2 messages about it. I want to start doing an Ohio State position review. I know the team very well. I know the players very well. And I know the recruits because I was recently there. And so I want to take one position group a show and kind of go through it and analyze it from my perspective.
I definitely want to get into some of the older stories and experiences I had in the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, and my time there, some of the things I saw. And I want to talk about the 2006 National Championship specifically because, obviously, that was Florida. I was there, Urban Meyer, and we played Ohio State, which I think it'll be interesting to hear about. The other person I want to talk about, I talked about Michael Thomas in the first episode, and I think people enjoyed it. They enjoyed kind of hearing a more intimate perspective into him. And I want to talk about Tim Tebow, another very highly, highly elite individual. And I want to talk about, you know, is the Tim Tebow that the world knows reality or is it show? And my experiences with him. I also want to talk about more detailed stories about some epic plays that in the history of college football, Ohio State, Florida, things like that. Also some of the epic games that I was a part of, 2013 Michigan State and Clemson losses, the 2014 Alabama game and the trick play, some backstory into some of that game, and then what really happened against Virginia Tech in 2014. Also the 2016 Clemson game and the aftermath, what happened and kind of that caused Urban to blow up Ohio State football, and then the transition into the Ryan Day era with Kevin Wilson coming in, and so much more. I also want to talk about some of the atmospheres and schools and stadiums I've been a part of and seen, because there's some ridiculous places that I want to put on your bucket list to visit. Again, just thank you for listening. Please share our show with friends and family. This is just the beginning of our quest and our journey. And I think this is the genesis of something that I think could be great. We want to do this more frequently with more content and constantly improve this show. So your support and sharing your experience with this show will help us do that. Like always, if you loved it and would recommend it to friends, we appreciate you. And if you don't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Menace to society.